VoiceRepublic.com, home to the spoken word.
Ich würde jetzt Professor Mousseau bitten, unseren Blick noch weiter zu vertiefen, weg von den menschlichen Aspekten hin zu den Aspekten, die unsere Umwelt und das nichtmenschliche Leben in den betroffenen Gebieten betreffen. Herr Professor Mousseau?
Well, it really is wonderful to be here. Thanks so much for inviting me to be part of this family. My first meeting 2 years ago was really an eye-opener. I've learned an awful lot. As a simple biologist, environmental biologist, I don't often come into contact with the human health issues, but this area of research really has opened my eyes to the potential utility of even some of the simple ecology that we do. It seems to be of some relevance from time to time. So today, I just wanted to give a short update. I didn't want to go through everything we've done, just a recent update of recent developments that might interest you related to Fukushima studies. The Chernobyl stuff has been handled quite a bit. I guess this is not connected, so I'll do this. So in Japan, Fukushima, one of the interesting papers of the last year, has found that, you know, the trees, the fir trees, have shown strange growth patterns. Basically, the radiation has clearly affected the growing tips, leading to a much branchier kind of growth form. And what makes this interesting is that, particularly interesting to me anyway, is that a few years ago we documented a number of different growth effects in Chernobyl to the trees growing there as well. Some of you have seen this picture before, showing this change in growth in the pines of Chernobyl. You know, normal pines look something like this, and in Chernobyl, in the more radioactive areas, they look a little bit more sinister, more like a fairy tale kind of thing, with the growth form vastly contorted in many ways. We're going to see the same sort of thing in Fukushima. This by itself, of course, doesn't have any direct connection to human health, but it is an indicator, a biological marker of the effects of radiation, even in relatively low-dose environments, or what would be considered that. If you've been following the biota of Fukushima and their effects, of course, you've read about the pale blue grass butterflies, the studies done by Otaki's group in Okinawa. Despite a lot of resistance from some of the locals and the challenges, he's managed to do some of the most interesting and comprehensive analyses of the biota in Fukushima, documenting inherited genetic effects as well as direct effects on development and morphology. Very important work, and it's continued. There have been quite a number of publications coming out of this group in the last few years. They're worth reading. And of course, the findings in Japan are very similar to, again, some of the stuff that we and others have documented for insects. Somebody mentioned Cornelia Hesse-Honegger earlier today, a Swiss artist who's documented changes in insect morphology around nuclear power plants and also in Chernobyl. And of course, this is one of the examples that Cornelia has drawn upon, the fire bug, or I call it the face mask bug, because it clearly looks like an African face mask when you look carefully, right? And when you darken out the legs. And in Chernobyl, over the last few years, we've shown, of course, that there are many, many unusual shapes and forms that are directly proportional to the radiation exposure. So again, it's a biomarker, an indicator of the radiation that's in the environment. It's clearly affecting the development. We see it in both Chernobyl and Fukushima now. For my group, the most important developments have been quite a number of publications related to the impacts on the birds of Fukushima. There hasn't, you know, this is really the important issue. There hasn't been a whole lot of research being done in Japan, and for two reasons. The first is that it's very difficult to figure out how to access these areas of high contamination. There is no central government control. There is no central organization to facilitate basic research. And so you actually have to have personal contacts with people who live there, who have homes in the region, in order to facilitate access to the various communities. And so anyway, we've been very, very fortunate to have many friends in Japan who've helped us with this. And so anyway, we've been publishing our results as best we can. We published several papers in the past year or so. And the results have been really, really overwhelming. We published this paper about a year ago, a little less than a year ago. And basically it shows, as we've found in Chernobyl, that as the radiation goes up, the numbers of birds go down. Very, very simple, very, very strong effect, overwhelming. There's absolutely no doubt about its the reality of this effect. We've also found that as, again, radiation goes up, the numbers of species, the biodiversity goes down. Now, what's the advantage of working with animals? Well, of course, they don't. Despite birds having wings during the breeding season, during most of the year, they don't actually move too far from their nests. And so we can actually estimate the doses that they're getting with accuracy, much better than with human populations, which do all sorts of other things. And so we've actually improved upon some of the simple approaches this year by collaborating with a group of radio ecologists who specialize in dose reconstruction. And we've actually reconstructed the dose for the 7,000 birds or so that were included in our surveys, published in this paper just a couple months ago. And the group in France is led up by Jacqueline Garnier-Laplace. She's been very, very helpful. And when we do the dose, the actual dose estimation, which people have been very concerned about, it's very, very clear. Most of the birds in these areas are getting doses that exceed what is known to cause reproductive effects in these animals. So perhaps it's not so surprising that we're seeing these dramatic declines in some of the species. And when you actually plot it out as a dose response, what you see here is a linear dose response with no indication of any kind of threshold in the response. So a little bit of radiation has a little effect, a lot of radiation has a large effect, and the errors around this estimation are relatively narrow. So this has been a major contribution to the understanding of these kinds of relationships in natural populations, and so that I think is interesting. Let me just skip ahead. So we're doing our best, and other groups in Japan are doing their best to continue to do research as much as possible. We're doing censusing of large mammals. We're doing census work with the rodents. We're also censusing the birds and butterflies and the moths. You know, one of the interesting similarities between birds and butterflies, the two groups that show the highest sensitivity in Fukushima to the radiation effects are birds and butterflies. Birds and butterflies actually share a unique genetic determination system for sex, for gender. In birds and butterflies, it's kind of the reverse to humans. In birds and butterflies, it's the female that is the heterogametic sex, the XY equivalent. Whereas in mammals like us, you know, males are XY, right? And so what this means, though, is that if there's a mutation on the sex chromosome, and it's in the female, bird or butterfly, that mutation can be expressed right away. And because females make the eggs, produce the progeny, you know, males usually don't do much more than provide the sperm, right? Because the females make the eggs, if there's a mutation that's expressed on the sex chromosome, you'll see an immediate decline in fertility rates and population growth rates. So we think this is very important, an important observation. And let's just finish up with a couple of pretty pictures. So so we're trying to, you know, again, most of you have heard these stories about how Chernobyl is thriving with wildlife. How many have heard these stories? Yeah, you know, don't believe them. They're not exactly true. There's some truth, but there's many untruths in there too. So anyway, we've been trying to get at this by actually putting up camera traps and counting, doing accurate censuses of the animals. Here's a Japanese goat antelope, a sero, that nobody ever sees in nature, but the cameras pick them up, and, you know, wild boar and foxes, and in Japan they have monkeys, which are really cool, interesting behaviors. And the first results from our camera traps from Japan, latitude, longitude, elevation all have some significant effect on the numbers of mammals, but the biggest effect so far is from radiation. And so this isn't published, so don't tell anybody. It's a secret until it's published, but I thought I would share that with you today. Let me, I think I just wanted one more point that's of relevance for Fukushima, and I think it's of relevance for studies of humans. I think this is one of the most important papers to be published in this field in the last few years. It was a sort of a meta-analysis by Garnier-Laplace from France, where she took all of the publications, all of the studies of Chernobyl animals that had been done up to that point, including some of ours, and compared them to the effects, and looked at the effects of radiation in Chernobyl, and compared that to the effects that were predicted by conventional models such as those used by ICRP or UNSCAR, and found the main result was that in the wild, under natural conditions, these populations of animals are on average 8 times more sensitive to radiation than predicted by the conventional models. The conventional models are based mostly on laboratory studies where the animals are kept warm and fed and kept disease-free. They're not natural, and as such, they're really, what this shows is they're not predictive of what's happening in nature under normal conditions. And I think what we can say from the studies that we've been doing of Chernobyl and Fukushima now, where there are many parallels, that this is absolutely the case. And the real world is very different from the laboratory world that most of these regulatory agencies base their regulations on. And I'll just stop there. Thank you.
VoiceRepublic.com, home to the spoken word.